We hope you enjoy this recording of Trying Talk, Women's Health, Fertility and Trying to Conceive with Dr. Deirdre Lundy, GP in Bray Women's Health Centre and Educator in Sexual and Reproductive Health. Recorded at Baby Talk Festival 2014. For more talks and information, visit babytalkfestival.ie.
So the sad thing about promoting fertility is it's all common sense. There's no magic. Like, everybody wants a herb or a tablet or something that's going to optimize fertility. And if it was out there, we'd all be on it, because there's no such thing, you know? It's all common sense. So you've got to live right. You want to avoid excess alcohol, illicit drugs. Performance drugs are huge. Lots of young men are using performance drugs to optimize their time in the gym, like even quite young teenagers. And we're seeing huge effects on sperm count and sperm motility for kids who use steroids and, you know, these creatinine bulking agents and things like that, which is kind of shocking. Maybe when you're a teenage boy, that's a good thing to take. Unfortunately, there's probably a Murphy's Law element to that. Only the one kid who takes a shot gets caught, you know. BMI is huge. The first thing they do with patients who go into the fertility clinics is get them to lose weight if they're overweight. They won't even assess them until their BMI is within the 19 to 30 range, because weight for women and fertility are so integral. Low weight's a big thing too. Like, although it's kind of fashionable and sexy to be size zero, there's a lot of size zero women are not fertile anymore. A lot of women, when their body weight drops below 19, they stop menstruating, they stop ovulating. Performance people, like athletes, long distance runners and things like that, they often stop menstruating, which they're kind of nearly pleased about because it helps them train, but it's a disaster for their future fertility. Sexual screening is huge. We have an incidence in this country of 1 in 12 positive for occult STIs. So if you take a population like, say, in UCD, out of every 100 about this, yeah, out of every 12 people you test, you're going to hit a positive either chlamydia or gonorrhea, because both of those STIs are generally silent. 80% of women with chlamydia, 50% of women with gonorrhea have no symptoms or signs. So they feel and look well, they're dating merrily, and little do they know they're actually spreading and suffering from a secret, a silent STI. And the government will not pay for free testing. You can have a test done through your GP or in UCD, it costs you 80 euros. Now, there's no teenager going to kick up 80 euros for something they don't even have any problems with, you know? And yet, when we look at the population that turns up into the Harry unit or the Mary infertility with fertility delay, there's something like 30% of them had long-term STIs that caused pelvic infection, pelvic inflammation, which were totally preventable. And now those women will never conceive spontaneously because of all the scar tissue in their fallopian tubes, and they need IVF. There's just no other way to conceive around it, you know? Smear tests are kind of not really connected. I mean, you can have very strange-looking cervical smear tests and still be perfectly fertile. So there's no causation between subfertility and a funny smear test, but we just recommend people over 25 who are sexually active to get them done as part of a gynecological check. And the other big thing is contraception. A lot of women think that if you're on the pill, wearing a patch, have an intrauterine device, it's going to somehow impair your ability to get pregnant in the future. It's absolutely not the case. Not only that, but sometimes I use hormonal contraception, primarily the pill, as a treatment for polycystic ovarian syndrome, which is a hormonal imbalance which impairs fertility. So sometimes I'll see a girl with PCOS or suspected PCOS, I'll put her on the pill for 6 months, I'll tell her, stay on it, and then the very week that you come off it, start trying for her to get pregnant, and the number of times she does is amazing. So being afraid of contraception is actually a waste of time. It doesn't affect it. Cycle, or what they now, they don't say cycle anymore, they say menstrual characteristics, NC. You should make a record. The only day any woman really needs to know is what day does your period start? That's all you need to know. You put it on your phone, you put it in your diary or whatever, and look at the interval. And if the interval is shorter than 21 days, so if you bleed more frequently than every 21 days, you may have a serious problem. And if you bleed less than every 35 days, you may have a serious problem. And it certainly could affect your fertility. So that's very easy to do. Some women are confused, like, what day does my period start? Because sometimes it's like this browny crap, and then it gets the first sign of any kind of colorful change. That's the first day of your period. And that's really important because your cycle length and your menstrual characteristics, as I'm supposed to call them nowadays,
affect when you're fertile. We know, people talk about this optimal 28-day cycle. Most women do not have a 28-day cycle. Only one in five women has a 28-day cycle. Most people are around the 25 to 35 range, and that's perfectly normal. But what's interesting about the cycle is the time of ovulation, when you're the most fertile, or fecund is the word they use, is 2 weeks before the day that your period begins. So if your bleeds come, like they do in the textbooks, every 28 days, well, that means day 14 will be the day you're most likely to be fertile, because that's when your egg is released. But if you only bleed every 35 days, which is perfectly normal, you're actually not ovulating until 21 days into the cycle, a full week past when most people think it's time to start trying for a baby. So sometimes a young woman who's worried about her contraception and her fertility in the future, all I have to do is take her through basic leaking cert biology, and then that's enough information for her to be able to figure out what's going to go on in the future, whether she's at risk or not. What you can do to optimize your fertility when you're ready to start, well, the other stuff that we talked about before still applies, so live well, don't abuse drugs, don't be obese. If you have chronic illness like diabetes or thyroid or seizure disorder, get into your specialist or your GP before you start to try. The last thing a diabetic woman should do is try to get pregnant at home and then tell her GP, oh great, I'm pregnant. She should have pre-pregnancy assessment because they're much more harder, they're much more difficult to manage than women who enjoy general good health. Smoking is a big thing, drinking. They say the maximum they would even tolerate is 4 units a week. And even at that level, we're not sure what low levels of alcohol, because it's a teratogen, you know, so we don't know what it might do to a developing fetus. Stay on your contraception, like we said. There's no need. In the old days, doctors used to take people off the pill for a couple of months so as to let, I don't know what, let all the hormone wash out of your body or let your cycles get back to normal. None of that is actually science-based, so we don't have any desire for someone to come off the pill for a month or 2 months or 3 months. But what we absolutely have to have them do is be on folic acid. Irish children are more at risk of neural tube defect and spina bifida than any other population in the world. We have the highest per capita incidence of it. And it's mostly related to our crappy weather. The sun isn't strong enough to replete the folic acid supplies and green leafy vegetables and things like that. So women, fertile women in Ireland, should all be on folic acid supplements. It should be in milk, it should be in bread, it should be in the water, because we're so at risk, and it affects the way the spine develops. So if you're a regular, normal, healthy woman, you should be taking at least 400 micrograms per day, and they include that in a pre-pregnancy vitamin package, you know, but they're expensive. Like, if it was a supplement in food, people wouldn't have to pay for it at all. Now, if you're ill, if you have epilepsy, if you have diabetes or something, you should be on 15 times that amount. You should be on 5 milligrams a day, which is a huge jump. And that's only available as a prescription. So I'm not going to be able to get my diabetic lady on her high-dose folic acid unless she comes to me beforehand and lets me know that she's ready to start trying for a baby. So that's why that pre-pregnancy counseling is really important. Rubella, which teenage girls are all inoculated against, serious germ and measles that can cause birth defects, hearing anomalies and things, apparently it doesn't last for a lifetime. And you might need to get your rubella boosted. You might need a booster of rubella. So you need to be tested for that before you actively start to get pregnant. And then common sense stuff like avoid over-the-counter medications unless they're on the safe list and environmental hazards. As far as timing, there's a huge industry. I actually did a scan downstairs to see were there any stands selling like ovulation predicting kits and junk like that. You know, I don't take anything away from them. If it gives a patient comfort, I'm like, go ahead, God bless. But in fact, you don't have to pinpoint the exact day of ovulation in order to get pregnant. Most fertility centers recommend having sex every 2 to 3 days and no more frequently than that. A, it's a chore to do it more often, unless you're motivated to for other reasons, and God bless. But if it becomes a drag, you're less likely to. And the other thing is, sperms can live inside the fallopian tubes for at least 2 or 3 days. So you're actually kind of just wasting your time by topping up the supply any more often than that. And if you're fertile, you will conceive with that interval. These are the categories of drugs you can and can't take when you're expecting or trying for a baby. So level A drugs are things that are perfectly safe, like folic acid. If you have thyroid disorder and you're on Eltroxin, you should stay on it. It's perfectly safe to the baby and to a developing fetus. Some things look okay. We don't have a lot of evidence, but we've never seen a baby harmed by it. So Penicillin. A lot of women are sick as dogs and afraid to go to the GP for an antibiotic because they don't want it to affect the baby. There's no problem with amoxicillin unless you're allergic or something, you know. If you're diabetic, stay on your glucophage, stay on your insulin. You absolutely have to have it. You'll miscarry without it. Then there are drugs that we'd rather you didn't use, things like Ventolin and Prozac and Diflucan. So if we can find an alternative, we would rather do that. Then there are things you should never, never use. So Suroxat antidepressant, lithium antidepressant for bipolar disorder, certain anti-epileptic drugs, obviously chemotherapy. And then there was what they call Category X, which are medicines that we know will cause quite catastrophic birth defects. Thalidomide is an obvious one, we've all heard of that. A big one, though, is Roaccutane, which a lot of young women are on. It's a very strong retinoid that helps with acne. Super drug. One of my kids was taking it. But if you have a female patient on this drug, they'll only give her 1 month's supply at a go, and they make her do a pregnancy test every time they give her the prescription because they're so afraid of the teratogenia, the birth defects that are associated with using that product. Some people worry about over-the-counter stuff, and there are some concerns. Paracetamol, aspirin. Paracetamol is generally okay in all terms. Aspirin's dodgy in the third trimester, so we try to avoid it, as our non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, so like Brufen for a sore back, which a lot of women get in late pregnancy, should be avoided in the third trimester. Most vitamins are perfectly safe. In fact, they're encouraging women now to stay on vitamin supplementation throughout pregnancy, but not vitamin A. Vitamin A isn't cleared by the kidney efficiently during pregnancy, and we're not too sure about its safety level. This is just other stuff like environmental hazards. Shift work is okay when you're pregnant. It's not associated with early miscarriage or whatever, but it's not good for general fertility. You're supposed to sleep when it's dark and be awake when it's light. And it can affect hormone levels if you're not. So that's not good for a woman who's trying for a baby, you know? Men have to do their part. We used to focus almost exclusively on women when it came to fertility promotion, but now we're realizing that there's a lot going on in the men that we didn't appreciate. So their general lifestyle advice would be similar about alcohol, illicit drugs, obesity even, you know. They should ejaculate regularly. Sperm are only produced as you ask for them. So every time you ejaculate, more sperms become created. So if you're only ejaculating once every month or 2 months, the sperms that are in your body when you do finally ejaculate are old and slower and probably disformed. So at least once a week when you're thinking about trying for a baby. And then you need to keep your testicles cool. They're on the outside of the body for a reason. They don't perform right if they're at the same temperature as the rest of us. So if you're wearing very snug clothing or underwear, if you sit in hot tubs or jacuzzis or whatever, if you're sitting a lot, because when you're sitting, your testicles are heated. So say long-haul lorry drivers were notoriously known for having subfertility with their partners. And then the big thing nowadays is laptops. If you put the laptop on your lap, the heat generated by the laptop will actually raise the testicular temperature and has been associated with bad semen analysis. So laptops don't go on laps if dads are trying for a baby, you know? So these are the odds. If you're young, they're pretty good. So if you're under 35 and you're trying, within one year, 85% of couples, these are Irish data now, and within 2 years, 95% will be pregnant. But you know what? 2 years trying is a long time. And after, I'd say, 6 to 8 months, if you haven't seen success, particularly if you're in the 35-plus age group, go and talk to your doctor. Because even if there isn't a big problem, just the kind of emotional negativity of failing, failing, failing will start to get in on you, you know? So like I said to you before, there's 14%, or I don't think I mentioned that, 14% of Irish people complain that they didn't get pregnant immediately. We know, for the most part, that's an age-related thing. That's why it's on the increase, because the age of first pregnancy is on the increase. For men, 9 times out of 10, it's an issue of sperm, which can generally be circumvented, even lifestyle changes. For women, there's so many things that can be wrong. You could be not producing healthy eggs, you could be not producing any eggs at all, there could be structural problems within the fallopian tubes or the womb. There's a lot of tests that have to be done on a woman, whereas for a man, it's usually pretty straightforward. You take a sample of semen, you look at it under the microscope, and either he's rocking and rolling or he's not, you know? So those are the things, we talked about these already, so age, weight, smoking. And just very quickly, it's not enough to just be a mom if you're an Irish woman. You have to have a good education, you have to get a fabulous career, you have to stay in your career until you're at a place where you can safely be absent for a while to have your baby and maybe give it a few months at home. It's a disaster because it's pushing your first pregnancy later and later and later, and that is not what nature ordained. nature ordained young women to be pregnant because that's when we're best prepared for it. So this is a really good study from back in 2007 in this journal, Human Reproduction. The highest rate of fecundity, that's I had sex, I got pregnant straight away, is 22. And that's for all of Western Europe. So a woman peaks at her ability to conceive at 22. You'd imagine the teenagers seem to have a higher level, but no, it doesn't regulate till then. And then down it comes until you're about 35, it's almost like a bell curve, and then after 35, it completely plummets. And there's a very large proportion of Irish women who are waiting until after their 35th birthday to start even thinking about having a family. There's also an impact of paternal age, because men are older starting families nowadays as well. And we found that some small studies have said that men in their late 30s have a drop in fertility as well, so that's a factor. So have a look. These are by age. If you're 19 to 26, so you're in the peak fecundity, chances are you'll be pregnant within 2 years, 98% success. But it goes down, and look, it's still not too bad. 82% in the first year if you're over 35. So we see the other 18% that don't come in. Weight I've already discussed. I tell you, if you're obese and you go to a fertility clinic, they won't even. They barely take your name and address until you drop some weight. And they have all sorts of services to help you do that because it is such an important factor. Smoking is bad for you, and I have a list of reasons why that is. We're now being urged as GPs to offer smoking cessation support to pregnant women. We would rather put pregnant women or women planning a baby on a nicotine patch and have all that nicotine pumped into the baby than her smoking. Because at least when she's on nicotine, we know exactly what toxin the baby's been exposed to. Whereas with smoking, there's like 4,000 different ones and we don't know what she's taking. This is probably one of the most interesting slides. This is an IVF series from the Rotunda Hospital where they have the human assisted reproduction. That's what an ovum looks like. An egg should look like that under the microscope with a beautiful corona and a nice circular shape and an outline and no real inclusions or abnormalities. And these were all taken from one lady who smoked 20 cigarettes a day. In fact, they put her on, she tried her best to just continue smoking, and she said she had, but in fact she hadn't, so that's why they were interested to see the slide. Like, they gave her, they down-regulated her, they gave her ovulation and stimulation, and they collected these. So she went through quite hazardous medical procedures to gather these eggs. They only gathered 5, and none of them were usable, because she was a smoker. So that's a really kind of telling slide about smoking and fertility. Alcohol, we've already talked about, it's a teratogen. You really shouldn't drink it all, but if you're going to, drink very, very lightly as a pregnant mom. In fact, I would recommend nothing. And the worst thing you can do is binge drink. So we'd rather see you have a half a glass of wine every night than do nothing and then once every month go out and just let it all hang down. It does far more damage to the placenta. Caffeine, we've already talked about. The thing I find with some women with fertility delay is they don't drink tea or coffee when they're pregnant. Fair enough. But they drink a lot of chocolate. There's as much caffeine in chocolate, hot chocolate, as there is in tea and coffee, so they have to be careful about that. And stress is a big one. Stress, it's stressful just to be alive today. It's very stressful if you're hoping to get pregnant and it's not happening. And then if you go and get help and you need to have tests and interventions, it's like off the charts stressful. So a big part of any kind of subfertility is stress management. And that doesn't mean everyone has to see a counselor, but we often give them advice on things that they, even if they were not that touchy-feely in their earlier life, they need to start making time for themselves. So that's where things like massage and reflexology, there's no proven data to support that regular use of these alternative and support medicines help give you better fertility, but they certainly down stress levels, and that can't hurt, you know? A lot of people say, well, I'm going to work my guts out until the baby comes, and then I'll take a break. And we say to them, well, look, why don't you start living your life the way you will have to do when the baby comes now? And that may actually boost your fertility. And it all, well, if they have the option to do that. Not everybody does. It does. You used to always say, if you went to the GP, oh, sure, you've only been trying 6 months. Oh, you've only been trying a year. Come back, you know. Absolutely not acceptable anymore, because we found that the stress level just perpetuates itself. So I would say if you're under 35 and you haven't had success within a year, go to the doctor. If you're over 35, don't leave in 6 months. Because by the time we identify a problem and set you on the path to correct it, it could be, like, to get an appointment with no private insurance to the Harry is like 17 months. So if you tell me when you're 35 that you're having a delay in fertility, and then I do all the tests and I say, oh my God, yeah, there's something going on, And then I refer to the house. You'll be 37 before they even see you in the door. Like, it's crazy too late. So I would say 6 months would be the longest I would ask a woman over 35 to try without success. When I see her in the general practice, I take a full history and examination. Like, even if I've known her for years, I would start from scratch to make sure I didn't miss something. They have to have an in-depth gynecological review, including a full STI screen. And, well, smear's not relevant, but I'll do it if it's due. Blood tests are key for her. We can identify who's ovulating and who's not by just blood tests, so that's really handy to do. And then obviously a semen assessment for him. And the amazing thing is, of all the people who go to the GP and have these tests done, almost 25% of them get pregnant before the results are back in the file. Because there's something about going to the doctor and putting a word on it saying, I've been trying and it's not working, that maybe helps de-stress somebody, that someone else, you've shared this problem with them. And it's amazing, like, I never say that to the patients because of the disappointment if you're not pregnant before the tests come back. But it is amazing, it's uncanny how people get pregnant before I've ever even seen the results of the test.